Welcome back to Noracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and with me, as always, is my co-host.
Hello, everyone. Today, we are looking at a radical new approach to getting payloads into orbit. Instead of building bigger chemical rockets, what if you just built a 6-mile-long gas-powered gun?
It sounds like pure science fiction, but a startup in Oakland is actually building the prototypes right now.
We'll also look at how Cognizant is managing massive swarms of autonomous AI agents and a pretty alarming report on exactly what your LG smart TV is doing while the screen is off.
A lot of ground to cover today. Let's get right into it. Let's start with launch infrastructure. For decades, the space industry has been bound by the tyranny of the rocket equation. Roughly 95% of a rocket's mass is just the fuel needed to lift the payload and the remaining fuel off the ground.
Right, which is why access to space has always been so prohibitively expensive. You're throwing away most of your vehicle's capacity in the first few minutes of flight just to fight gravity.
A company called Longshot Space is trying to bypass that entirely. They are developing a big, staged, gas-powered gun to launch satellites into low Earth orbit. We are talking about a kinetic launch system.
Kinetic launch is one of those concepts that sounds completely absurd until you look at the math. Instead of putting all the heavy, gravity-defeating infrastructure on the vehicle, you put it on the ground. You use a large mechanical system to just fling the payload into the atmosphere.
And they aren't just doing math on a whiteboard. They have a working 6-inch prototype gun at an engineering compound in Oakland, California. They've already tested it, and it's reaching speeds over Mach 4.
Mach 4 is impressive for a ground-level prototype, but their long-term design is staggering. They are planning a scaled-up version that would stretch roughly 6 miles long, or about 10 kilometers. The goal is to propel objects up to Mach 23.
Mach 23. Just to put that in perspective, orbital velocity is around Mach 22. So they are literally trying to shoot things directly into orbit.
The engineering challenges here are wild. The biggest one is aerodynamic heating and G-forces. If you accelerate a satellite to Mach 23 inside the thick lower atmosphere, the friction is immense. It's like hitting a solid wall of air.
Exactly. How do you protect sensitive electronics, like solar panels or optical sensors, from being completely destroyed?
You'd probably have to design incredibly ruggedized satellite buses. This isn't going to be for launching delicate instruments like the James Webb Space Telescope. This would be for bulk materials, fuel, water, or very robust, solid-state communication satellites.
There's also the question of where you even build a 6-mile-long cannon. The regulatory and land use hurdles on Earth would be sizable. You'd need a perfectly straight, flat piece of land, probably pointing east over an ocean, and miles away from populated areas.
And you have to consider the sonic boom. Firing a projectile at Mach 23 at sea level is going to be loud. But if they can make it work, the cost savings would be astronomical. You're replacing millions of dollars of rocket fuel with compressed gas and electricity.
It's exactly the kind of radical rethinking the space industry needs if we are going to build large-scale infrastructure in orbit. We can't just keep relying on chemical rockets for every single pound of cargo.
I do wonder how they handle the staging of the gas expansion over 6 miles to keep the acceleration smooth enough not to just crush the payload instantly. That feels like a materials science nightmare.
Moving from physical infrastructure to digital, let's talk about the enterprise AI landscape. For the past year, the focus has been on individual AI co-pilots. You ask a chatbot to write an email or summarize a document, and it hands it back to you.
But the real value unlock is autonomous multi-agent systems. This is where you have different specialized AI agents talking to each other, passing data back and forth, and executing complex workflows without a human in the loop for every single step.
The problem is that scaling those systems is difficult. A lot of companies hit a wall once they deploy about 5 agents. The coordination and complexity just become unmanageable. They step on each other's toes or get stuck waiting for inputs.
Which brings us to Cognizant. They are positioning themselves not just as an IT services provider, but as an AI builder. They are creating these structured environments, which they are actually calling an ant farm for AI agents.
I love that analogy. It perfectly describes a fleet of specialized workers operating in a constrained, governed ecosystem. And they are putting serious resources behind this. Cognizant just announced plans to scale a new professional job family to 15,000 people.
15,000 people? Just for this? That is a big headcount commitment.
Yeah. They're splitting it into 5,000 Frontier certified engineers and 10,000 Frontier business operators. Their CEO, Ravi Kumar S., explicitly stated that AI is going to create more jobs than it displaces by shifting value and accountability to the front lines.
That's a huge bet, but it makes sense when you look at the results. They ran a pilot pod with these engineers and operators, and they managed to automate a food service company workflow into 17 production AI agents. That setup is saving account managers 11 hours every single week.
17 agents working together is a serious swarm, and it highlights why they need those 10,000 business operators. When you have autonomous agents spending compute tokens and making decisions, you need human oversight. You need someone accountable if an agent gets stuck in a loop or makes a costly error.
Right. The risk of runaway token consumption is real. If two agents get into an argument and just keep pinging the API back and forth thousands of times a minute, your cloud bill is going to explode before anyone notices.
That's why the ant farm model is so critical. You need strict enterprise governance. You have to put guardrails around what these agents can access, how much they can spend, and when they are required to ask a human for permission to proceed.
It's a fascinating shift. We're moving from humans doing the work with AI assistance to AI doing the work with human supervision. And Cognizant is clearly trying to corner the market on providing that supervision at scale.
I'm just curious how those 17 agents handle edge cases. If the food service supplier changes their inventory format, do all 17 break at once? It seems fragile.
Now, let's look at something a bit closer to home. If you have an LG smart TV in your living room, you might want to pay attention to this.
Yeah, this is a pretty alarming report from Gamers Nexus, Level 1 Techs, and a few independent researchers. They dug into the background telemetry of LG webOS smart TVs, specifically looking at models like the OLED G5.
What they found is that these TVs are aggressively sweeping your local network to map out other devices. We are talking about identifying phones, smartwatches, laptops, anything connected to your home Wi-Fi.
And it gets worse. The tests demonstrated that the TVs can actually capture microphone audio while the screen is completely off in standby mode.
Wait, seriously? It's listening when it's ostensibly turned off?
Yes. And if the TV happens to be disconnected from the internet at the time, it doesn't just drop the data. It stores that audio locally on the device's internal storage. Then, the second you reconnect it to Wi-Fi, it uploads the backlog to LG servers.
That is invasive. I mean, we've known for a while that smart TVs are basically data-harvesting advertising platforms. Manufacturers sell the hardware at a tight margin, or even a loss, and make up the difference by monetizing your viewing habits over the lifespan of the device.
Exactly. It's all tied to ad networks like LG Ad Solutions. But there is a large difference between tracking what shows I watch on Netflix and actively mapping my private home network and recording ambient audio in standby mode.
The researchers also found several webOS security vulnerabilities alongside this. If an unauthorized attacker exploited those, they could potentially gain control over the television inside your home.
So you've got a device with a live microphone sitting in your living room, constantly phoning home, and it has known security flaws.
It really raises the question of where the line is between standard product analytics and corporate surveillance. Consumers don't expect their TV to act like a Trojan horse for an ad network monitoring the physical environment of their house.
The frustrating part is how hard this is to stop. You can try to dig through the opaque terms of service during setup and opt out of certain tracking, but usually that disables core features of the TV or constantly nags you to accept the terms again.
Your best bet is to just not connect the smart TV to your network at all. Buy a dedicated streaming box like an Apple TV or a Roku. Plug it into the HDMI port and keep the TV itself offline entirely. That's the only way to be sure it's not quietly logging data in the background. It's a sad state of affairs when the best way to use a premium smart appliance is to forcefully make it dumb again. But given this report, I think a lot of people are going to be disconnecting their TVs tonight.
The Internet Archive has launched a major fundraising campaign for September called Keep Our Servers Running. They are offering a 2-to-1 match for recurring donations of $25 or more. So a $25 monthly gift unlocks an additional $50 in matching support.
They currently preserve 210 petabytes of knowledge on custom hardware. Since they don't run ads or sell data, they rely entirely on these drives to cover their sizable power and cooling costs. If you rely on the Wayback Machine, now is a great time to chip in.
Over in the open source world, Knitter and Xcancel have officially resumed service. If you remember, they shut down temporarily back in August after receiving aggressive cease and desist letters from XCorp over alleged API circumvention and data scraping.
The Knitter project maintainers stated they received legal advice and are confident they can continue. The GitHub repository is back up under its AGPL license. It's a bold move to push back against platform walled gardens, and it'll be interesting to see if X escalates it further.
IKEA Hong Kong has launched a new ad campaign called Make Space for What You Love. Instead of just pushing price discounts, they are focusing on emotional storytelling, showing how smart organization helps residents retain their personal hobbies in notoriously cramped apartments.
It's a smart pivot. They are facing intense price competition from mainland rivals, so leaning into hyper-local cultural identity and the emotional value of your personal space is a solid defensive strategy.
Finally, a quick nod to a growing trend in the developer community, the de-brain rot vacation. We saw a great post detailing the benefits of taking a hard digital detox, stepping away from the screens, the feeds, and the constant notification cycles to just clear your head.
Honestly, with the pace of AI releases and tech news right now, logging off for a week sounds like an absolute necessity. Highly recommend leaving the phone in another room for a few days.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of Noracast Tech Briefing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe in your podcast app of choice so you never miss an update.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the latest news in AI, space, and everything in between. Until then, have a great day.